This is Dave Glowatz. I'm here with Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader. How are you doing today, Ben?
Good, 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 good.
That sounds good. Today we're talking about Ben's column titled Ready, Set, Hike that appeared in the Reader on September 3rd, 2009. This is an article that talks about how Mayor Daley might balance the 2010 budget, which is not looking good at this moment. Let's start out talking about the budget itself. In past years, when the mayor and the administration begin to have public meetings, they first release their preliminary budget, which is now available on the city's website. Have you taken a look at it?
Yeah.
Does the preliminary budget itself give you any revelations that were not in the announcements that the city made?
Nothing particularly striking. One sort of non-significant revelation is that they project to bring in more money, I love this stuff, through the amusement tax that they attach to the price of a sporting ticket. So I guess they're projecting good years for the Bulls, the Blackhawks, the Bears, the White Sox, and Cubs. So, of course, that's great news for all Chicagoans.
Well, it wouldn't be too hard to have a better year for the Sox and Cubs than this year, yeah. That's for sure. I got an update, which I think you've seen from Alderman Dixon of the 24th Ward, where she has her monthly updates. She talks about tax increment financing this month. She wrote something in her update that says, I'll quote it, tax increment financing does not change the way your taxes are assessed or change the way you pay taxes. No new taxes are imposed. However, the downside is that an improved community will bring higher taxes for everyone. And I assume she means higher property taxes in the district that tax increment financing is working because there's going to be development there. This particular aspect of increased taxes is not often discussed. You talk about it in terms of taxes being siphoned away from the rest of city departments, requiring them to raise taxes later on. The reason I bring it up is because at the very end of your article, you mentioned that one way to plug, as you've said before, the budget hole is to take this slush fund that tax increment financing is contributing to and plug it back into the budget. Do you have any perspective on this?
I got a big kick out of reading that. I know I've told you this before. The city is endlessly updating its definition of what a TIF is and how a TIF works in order to avoid stating the obvious. I take sort of credit for this. Why not? Because people are starting to pay attention to TIFs, they feel compelled to confront the obvious reality that a TIF elevates taxes. It causes tax rates to go up, therefore it forces people to pay more in tax dollars. So to get around it, they use all sorts of weaselly language, like the stuff you just quoted from the email that Alderman Dixon sent out. Now, I've seen similar language elsewhere, so I presume that that document was actually written by some planner in the planning department, or what is it called now? The Department of Community Development, some flack in the Department of Community Development. So the whole purpose of that is just to confuse people and try to distance themselves from the realization that TIFs mean that they're going to pay more in taxes. The second point, which is, what can you say? What's buried in the second point is that the TIF is such a wonderful device of economic development that it's going to spur a radical increase in the value of property, and therefore we'll all be paying more in property taxes. That is such an absurd account of how TIFs have operated. TIFs have been used for so many different things over the city that have absolutely nothing to do with raising value of property. For instance, in many cases, they're used to build schools. And as we said before, schools are tax-exempt institutions, so it has no impact whatsoever.
So you're saying you haven't seen TIF-funded development raising the value of adjacent property to the degree that property taxes go up?
It's really hard to establish one way or another. It's a guessing game. It's like everything else. It's like trying to figure out how much the parking meters are worth. It's like, you know, one of these like absurd arguments that geeks will have as they play with the statistics any way they want. For instance, how do you calculate the impact of Block 37 development? That is the oldest TIF-funded project in the city of Chicago. It's been largely a disaster, one setback after another. It was originally proposed in 1984. Here we are, 2009. It's not completely finished yet. They hasn't poured any money, tax dollars, into the general coffers yet. This will be the first year that any money comes from it. And yet, surrounding property in the loop has gone up. How in the world can you possibly say the disaster of development that was Block 37 is the cause of the increased property value in the loop? There are many factors at play here, not the least of which, just dawning on me, is that many of the universities in the area are building dormitories and they're moving students downtown. There's a lot of tremendous amount of factors that go
so
into
it. So you can't attribute it to Block 37
right.
development.
You can't attribute to TIF related. It's very hard to calculate what impact a TIF related project has had on its surrounding property. The city just makes stuff up. They'll just say, oh, well, there's like with the Olympics, there's going to be $22.5 billion of development generated from the Olympics. And I think they claim $8 billion has been generated from TIF projects. Why stop at eight? Why don't you say $15 billion? If you're making the stuff up, you know, let's really wow them.
And then finally, this week, you had another staff members of the Reader met with your new owners, who are the investment fund that took over from Creative Loafing, or now owns Creative Loafing, which owns the Reader. Do you have anything that you want our listeners to know about the future of the Reader based on that meeting?
Well, I still have my job, which is the good news for me and people who like what I do. They were very encouraging, the things they said at the meeting. The people who spoke, they had hired, there were actually three consultants who were there who are former journalists or journalists who have been hired to help plan the future of the Reader and of the other operations in the Creative Loafing empire. And they said all the right things. They said that they believe you have to build a product by hiring people, not firing them, and that they wanted the Reader to continue to produce investigative stories and even go back to the days of long narratives, which we haven't done a lot of in the last few years.
So it looks like that might result in beefing staff back up.
That's the positive view I got out of it, that it looks as though the days of cutting are over, at least for the moment. In fact, I got this out of, I'm hoping the Sun-Times is going to do the same thing. I know they're about to get a new owner. These people yesterday specifically said that you cannot produce a better product by cutting its staff, which is, to me, fundamentally obvious. I don't know how anybody thought you could do it.
So it's refreshing to hear.
Yeah,
that.
It was really refreshing to hear. The Reader for 2 years has been cutting staff, and so they've been asking people to do more things with less staff. I don't know how and what system, what universe that results in a better result. So they said all the right things, and to quote the great Mick Dumke, my dear friend and colleague, why not believe him?
So I guess we'll leave it there. Ben Jarofsky, the Chicago Reader, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
This is Dave Gloatz. We've been speaking about the rest of the story. When you have a chance, check back at MrRadio.org for further installments or subscribe to our podcast. Thanks for listening.